Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us today in the middle of summers. We are talking about financial issues. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, helping be your financial planners during the week. And then we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So if you've got some advisors you're working with today, or you don't, or do things on yourself, whatever it is, I want you to consider this radio program another source for information. And we tend to talk about things that are relevant to those that are planning for and nearing retirement, transition into retirement, retirement income stuff, and then also some of the peripheral financial planning issues.
What's happening now, but really we try to take a view of retirement that is past just the retirement day or the first couple years of retirement.
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to somebody, he's some sort of a business consultant type person. We're talking about, Hanson McLean, we tend to focus on a lot of retirement planning issues, retirement planning. And this person says to me, well, doesn't that exclude a lot of other things? I said, well, we still deal with those, but retirement planning is the number one issue for most Americans. I mean,
middle class and upper class Americans, it is, if you're 50,
why are you saving for the future?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, if you're planning on working until the day you drop dead and you're very confident that you could, then you would, for theoretically, why would you ever save for the future?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
So yeah, we do. It does exclude.
So we still talk about other financial planning topics. We help our clients deal with planning for their kids' education, their daughters' weddings, and paying for the vacation homes and all those other issues. But for the crux, for most Americans, it's not necessarily that people say, I want to retire as soon as possible, but people want to be in a position so that retirement's a possibility, that work is a choice, not an obligation.
And that's where we focus our energy.
I had dinner with
a gentleman this week, and he said, he's shorting Tesla stocks. What do I think? And I said, well,
that's hilarious.
I would have a tendency to do put options because there's less risk involved in it than a straight short, unless you're somehow hedging that risk otherwise. So I would have a tendency to use a put option. And he said, well, maybe I should come and visit with you. And I said, well, we don't do that. That isn't the type of work we do.
It's like having dinner with the doctor. Hey, I freebase cocaine just every once in a while. What do you think of that? Is that bad?
No. Well, this gentleman had a high enough net worth that
I know, sure, but you got to understand, when you're going in short, you got to understand the risk you're taking and who you're. Every time you make a trade in the market, there's someone on the other end taking the opposite trade.
Yeah, well,
whatever it is, there's someone else on the other side taking the opposite. They have a different belief.
Well, shorting a stock means that you're borrowing the stock from someone else, then selling it, and then having to buy it back at some point in time and return it to the person that you borrowed it from. And you're hoping that you get to buy it back from less than what you borrowed it at. That's what a short is. So he was excited that I actually had an alternative, and he said, well, maybe I should come and see you. We could actually talk about, like,
and here's why at Hanson McLean.
And I just like, well, we don't do that. I understand it. I can do it. We just don't focus there.
Well, the reason you stated that Hanson McLean doesn't help people with it is because you don't believe that long term you're going to make more money doing that than other strategies.
That's correct. And for the average American, there's just way too much risk in in puts and shorts.
All right. So even we're going to take calls here in just a moment. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. And so as a financial advisor, I've been doing this almost 30 years now. Every once in a while, I get tempted and think, this is just too great. I mean, I got to make a trade here somewhere. So this was back in the early 2000s, the housing bubble, right? And it was just writing on the wall. Now, we didn't think the stock market was going to fall almost 60%.
We did think that real estate was going to blow.
So I bought some puts on Countrywide.
As did I.
I think it was IndyMac Bank. It was Countrywide and a bank, thinking there's no way these are sustainable.
I bought some in 2006.
I don't remember the year. All I remember, they were as long term as I can get, like 2.5 years. And they expired out of the money, meaning they expired. They eventually collapsed in price, but it was so much longer than I could have bought those options for. Right?
So you were right that you thought Countrywide was going to, and IndyMac were going to suffer great drops in their share price. But you were right about that, but your timing was wrong.
There's an old saying that a bull market can last much longer than you could remain solvent.
Yes.
And that's the problem. Anytime you make these speculative bets, you've got to be right on a number of factors.
Yeah, not only the bet, but the timing.
And when roughly 80% of professional money managers can't outperform their own indexes that they're trying to outperform by employing all these techniques and using a team of researchers, how is the average individual going to be able to? So that's why we don't participate in many of those. Anyway.
But.
1-888-2-HANSON.
We do help people with retirement planning, though.
Absolutely. And to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON gets you on the program. We're starting off in Denver, Colorado with Dave. Dave, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Dave.
So I've got a couple of questions for you. So I'm self-employed, and I've got a solo K or an owner 401K.
Okay. Oh, great.
And I'm also looking at doing some investing outside of retirement. So really the question revolves around choosing a broker and the fees involved. I've been with a couple of different large brokerage firms, and after switching from the first one, I realized that the fees were a lot higher than I thought they were. And then after going to the second one, I just realized that there's not enough time being given to discuss matters with him. So First of all, how do you determine the fees? Because I know a lot of those end up getting hidden and stuff like that. And then second of all, what is your best recommendation as to how to choose an advisor, whether it be a large firm, a small firm, whatever that may be?
Well, let's start with you, right, rather than with the advisor. So how much money are you do you have to invest, and how often are you adding to it?
So we're adding to it monthly. In the solo K, we're putting in about, it's just me and my wife, so it's about $35,000 a year each, which is
okay, 70 grand.
The most
okay.
that we can get in there based on profit sharing and all of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can't go any higher.
All right. And then how much in addition to that, you said outside the retirement plan you're trying to invest, how much do you have, what's your capital outside the retirement plans, and how much are you adding to it?
So we'd probably be looking at starting with maybe $100,000 right now.
And how much are you adding to it on a monthly, quarterly, or annual basis?
You know, being self-employed, it just varies. It's based on kind of excess income that's coming in. You never really know when the next one's
here's the interesting thing.
So, or what expenses arise.
I mean, there's a few ways you can do things. One is you can say, you know what, I don't want to work with some so-called financial advisor. I don't see the value. How can I get this as cheap as possible? Well, you can buy index funds for almost nothing. I mean, they're
less than 0.1%.
Yes, correct. Less than 0.1%. So the big firms all have the very low cost index funds. That would be your very least expensive way to do it. Secondly, if you say, well, I'd like to have a little help with the overall allocation of things. I'm not trying to outperform the market, but I want some overall allocation. You could use like what they call them, these robo-advisors. And a lot of the big firms have some sort of similar offering to that. And there you pay, it's maybe about 40 basis points, 0.4%.
Almost 0.5%.
A little less than 0.5%, which is an okay route to go. but then the question is, if you want some overall financial planning and guidance along the way, like where should we, how should we best maximize the solo K? When should we save in other areas? How do we make sure that's tax efficient in the other areas? How do we deal with other our business income fluctuations?
Should I be making other non-deductible IRA contributions and then converting them to a Roth?
Those sort of things. Then I mean, you're probably looking at a certified financial planner, and on average, they charge about 1% a year, give or take. A little more sometimes on smaller accounts, a little less on larger accounts.
But in your particular situation, how much money is in the solo K now?
About 250.
And how old are you?
40.
And how are you managing the solo K? Does your broker do it or do you do it?
Yeah, I'd say poorly at best.
Okay. You are or your broker
the
is?
The broker is.
I think you just have had a bad relationship and you're not finding value. Because you've got your own business, so my guess... I mean, I'm just thinking about the business owners that we have as clients. They tend to spend a lot of energy on their work, I mean, their business, and they tend to delegate out a lot of things in their life, right? They're pretty good delegators, et cetera. And most of them tend to delegate this portion out as well, but with someone who's competent that you feel good about.
So let's make a distinction between a financial advisor and a broker, right, Scott? Because that's the pricing distinction.
We all call ourselves financial advisors.
Right. Everyone. But a real financial advisor actually does a financial plan and says, what are your goals? What are you trying to achieve? So if you sat down.
Are we saving just for tax benefits? Are we saving so we can.
Or do you have children that you're trying to
5 years?
Fund their education?
They don't have children. But
okay. Are you, what are you trying to do?
You trying to buy a vacation home?
When do you want your house paid? So, if I'm 60, I want to retire when I'm 65. We have a 25-year ramp between now and then to get there. These are the things we need to do. And an assumed rate of return, this is what you'll look like at age 65, and this is what your retirement income. That's financial planning. Versus a broker, you just go and give them money, and they say, hey, we're going to put it in this paper bag and shake it twice a day, and it's going to be great. Just watch. If you want a financial advisor, you're going to get approximately the same costing. It's going to cost about
but
the
I'd
same
amount.
But I'd
look for a certified financial planner.
I would too.
And we have we tend to have a bias for independence where, one of the reasons Hanson McLean is independent is we don't manufacture any of our own products. We don't have any other agenda other than serving our clients. All of our revenue comes from our clients. So we're not out trying to pitch other products and whatnot, which is the conflicts the big firms have.
So, and if you don't want the financial planning and you just want to invest for the long term, I'd go and buy the total market and stay away from a broker.
Yep.
I'd buy the... What's that?
I think you nailed it on the head when you said that I just haven't received... I'm not opposed to paying for the advice.
If you're getting the right value.
I haven't received the value.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so... The hard part has been going through the phone book and how do you figure out who's who, right?
It's like you're 40. Have you even seen a phone book? Right?
Yeah, for no kidding, huh?
So on our website, we have a, what's it called, Jasmine?
We've got a guide.
A guide.
How to select a financial advisor.
How to select a financial
advisor. In our learning library, how to select a financial advisor goes through some of the key things to look for. And you could spend 10 minutes there and really get a good head start.
And it will give you kind of an overview of the questions to ask and how to choose an advisor that's appropriate for you.
And Hanson McLean has a couple certified financial planners in the Denver region, an office there. But
but we may or may not be a good fit.
Yeah.
So.
And then is there a book out there that you guys would recommend in order to help me have a better relationship with the advisor to understand more what they're saying and what they're talking about when they're talking about allocating funds?
So are you trying to increase your education?
He just wants to arm himself enough so that he can have intelligent conversations and knows when he's getting value, when he's not getting value, right?
That's exactly right.
Totally understand that. That's
book.
Pretty smart, actually.
Yeah. There should be. If there isn't.
Probably is.
There should be.
I
can't think of one, though.
No, because so many of these books are self-serving. They seem like the title might be...
Yeah. I don't have an answer for
Vanguard, though. Vanguard has a study on, and so does Morningstar, but Vanguard has a study on, what do they call it? Financial Advisor Alpha.
Alpha.
Go to Google on Vanguard's website for financial advisor study, and it'll tell you exactly how where the advisor should be adding value.
That's right. That's
it'll
right.
Spell it right out, and it's not
about
a book.
A six or seven page.
Yeah, maybe it's a little longer, but not that much longer.
White paper on,
yep.
On what, why an advisor can be worth paying
yes.
the extra money if they're providing certain services. That's a good
and
call.
And explain it to.
Good call.
And it's
yeah, just Google okay. Vanguard financial advisor,
study.
Working with financial advisor study.
I think they call it an alpha study, something like that.
Yeah. So appreciate the call.
Yeah, good luck,
Keep up
Dave.
The great work,
Take
Dave.
Care.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll continue with calls. Also in the program, we're going to spend a little time about what these retiring baby boomers, the impact it might have on our economy and how the impact it might have on some of our social services as well. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Are you a sports fan? Each year, teams spend the preseason getting ready for their big opening game. Well, retirement's a little like that. The difference is that instead of a yearly preseason, you spend your career getting your finances in shape for a retirement that could last 25 years or more. Think of Hanson McLean as the coach that gets you ready for your retirement season. For a free retirement readiness consultation, visit us at HansonMcLean.com today.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON is our contact number to be part of the program. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And by the way, we'd like to take your call. Sometimes we can't always take your call right away, but we'll schedule a time. So if you call us...
and we can't... get you on that day.
Because sometimes we've recorded on a Saturday.
Or sometimes we just have too many calls.
We will schedule a time to get your call at a time that's convenient for you. Because we tend to block off times during the week. And it's different days. Sometimes it's an evening. And we'll have different, but throughout the quarter, we'll have several different times where we block out just answering calls. So if you'd like to be part of our program, whether you listen to this via podcast or listen to it on the radio, simply call 1-888-2-HANSON, the 1-888-2-HANSON right now. And, we will get your contact information and schedule a time to take your call if we can't do so
I went and read a bunch of reviews online about our radio show.
You did?
Yeah.
Are there a bunch of reviews?
There were probably 5 or 6 reviews online.
That's it?
Yeah.
By the way, go review us.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Some people just disagreed with our
right.
financial advice, which actually
maybe maybe review
maybe.
I don't think our attorneys don't allow us to say only review us if you like us, right?
Yes, we're not allowed to say that.
All right, let's go back to the calls though. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're in Sacramento talking with Dan. Dan, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Great. How you doing, Dan?
Good, good. So, my wife and I have about $1,600 of discretionary income each month, and we're thinking about paying down our mortgage with making extra principal payments. So when we retire, when we plan to retire in about 8.5 years, we won't have a mortgage.
And
so we're not really sure.
How much is your mortgage payment, excluding taxes and insurance?
About $1,200.
Okay, so we got $1,200 a month. And if let's assume it's 8.5, right? So right now you say we've got $1,600 a month after taxes that we can go blow at a nice restaurant, or we can pay down on a mortgage, or do something else, right?
Right, that's correct.
Let's assume it's 8.5 years from now, and you both go into retirement. How much discretionary income will you have at that period of time?
None.
Okay.
We'll need all of our money from our investments and from Social Security to be able to pay our regular monthly expenses. I don't think we can afford a mortgage payment at that point.
Okay. And are you maximizing your 401k or 403b or 457 plans?
Pretty close, but not quite maximizing.
How close are you to maximizing?
About $4,500 less per year.
Oh, so you're pretty close.
Right.
And what's your mortgage balance?
Right now it's $240,000.
Do you think you can get it paid off in 8.5 years?
Yeah, if we both keep our jobs, and we
okay, there's always that.
How much money do you have in your 401ks, your retirement plans?
It's about $280,000, so it's not that much.
And you have no defined benefit pension coming to you in retirement, I assume, correct?
My wife has been with the state for 2 years, but so I don't know exactly how much she's going to end up with.
And she'll have in 10 years she'll be vested, and she'll probably have anywhere between 20% and 30% of her final income based on the current pension.
And how old are you, Dan?
I'm 59.
Okay. I love the concept of working on getting that home paid off.
What's the interest rate?
4.25.
So Scott, so here's the question: Did you do a net present value? You get the calculator out.
No, I was gonna, but in a perfect world, so you talk about some discretionary income you've got now that you're not gonna have at retirement, which is true for most Americans. Most Americans, right, their income's gonna be less. So the question is, how do we get our expenses less in retirement, so our lifestyle doesn't change?
Because money not going out is exactly the same as money coming in.
Right.
In retirement. Money not going out. And if you think about it, when you pay down your mortgage in retirement, wherein you're pulling money out of your retirement plans, all you're really doing is slowly transferring one asset to the other. Do you plan on staying in the existing home in retirement?
Yeah, we just bought. We downsized. So we're planning to be in this home for a long time.
I like the idea.
I like the idea.
I like the idea.
Yep.
I think it's great. I think it's a great idea.
And worst case, let's say it's 6 years from now and you don't keep your job. Just throwing it out there, right? Now at least your mortgage balance will be much less. You've got a couple options there. One, if rates are still low, you can look at refinancing.
Or reamortize.
Two, if your mortgage allows for it, which some does, you can do what's called a reamortization. So you go to the mortgage, the bank, and you say, look, I know we've got 22 years left on the mortgage, but because we've paid down the principal, can we re-amortize this, so have it so that the mortgage will be paid off over the next 22 years rather than keeping our payments the same? So that's an option.
Oh, okay.
And a third option, which I wouldn't recommend doing when you're still in your 60s, but a third option sometime down the road, you can look at a reverse mortgage if need be, which is essentially, think of it like a mortgage that you don't make the principal or interest payments. Rather, every month the mortgage balance continues to grow, which doesn't sound good, but you're guaranteed, as long as you keep up your home and the property taxes on it, you're guaranteed to live there till your dying day.
Yeah.
And if you go to sell it in the future or die, whatever equity is there is still part of your estate.
But the answer to your question is yes, we like the idea of paying down. So we have a view of paying down mortgages in retirement. If you can get your home paid off prior to retirement, we encourage it. If you get to retirement and your home is not paid off and the payments are troublesome, which is they're affecting your lifestyle, then we recommend at that point in time you probably get the longest mortgage possible so that you actually get your payments as low as possible. So you aim for having your home paid off. And there are some financial advisors that will tell you, don't ever pay your home off. Always keep a mortgage. And the reason is because you're going to earn more on your investments than what your mortgage payment is.
Maybe.
But we think that
you're not going to get a tax deduction for this by retirement with the way the standard deduction is so large now.
But we think that there's a lot of mental peace that comes to our clients that have their homes paid off when they go into retirement.
We're looking for peace for sure.
I tell you what, during the last Great Recession, there was a big difference between those that were retired with their home paid off and those that had a big mortgage payment. Because those with the home paid off, they're like, let's assume that felt like the world was coming to an end financially, right? So at least they said, well, I know my home's paid for. Worst case, my home's paid for.
Yeah. No one lost their home. That was paid off.
So maybe I can't afford to go out to eat or travel for a period of time, but at least my home's paid off. Those that homes weren't paid off and didn't have a big pension check, those are the ones that thought, uh-oh.
What happens if my asset that's paying the mortgage off goes to zero?
That's right.
So, yeah, accelerate it if you can.
Yeah.
All right, great.
All right, Dan, so what you also want to do with your wife is actually check to see what that benefit is going to be in retirement. And you might want to actually make some projections as to what Social Security looks like and what your financial situation looks like in 8 years. If you go to our website and you go through the tutorial, 7 personal decision points, it will actually show you how to do that calculation, how much money I'm going to need in retirement, and where's that money going to come from. And while you're on the our website, Jasmine, can we send Dan a copy of Decision Points, Scott's book about retirement?
Hold on, Dan. We'll put you on hold and get your information.
We'll send you a copy of the book, Decision Points, and then go to our website and view the tutorial. And you can either walk through with an advisor or just do it yourself. Yeah, all righty?
Great. Good luck to you. Thank you very much.
And, Pat, I appreciate you giving away my book. So, no problem. I'll pay for some more. I'm just kidding. It's a business ass. I'm just teasing you.
I know that.
I know that. I'm just telling the rest of the
because it's a huge huge income source, revenue source for Handsome McLean, your book is.
Because we give away most of them. 1-888-2-HANSOME is the number to be part of the program. Stick around. We're going to talk about how we're getting older and what the impact that could have on you and your money.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Handsome McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Handsome McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hansen.
Pat McLean, thanks for joining us.
That's right, sticking with us. And if you want to join the show, we'd still take some calls. Love to take your call. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. And, you know, part of our objective with our financial plan with clients is to get to a point at retirement so that you have the highest probability of success.
And what defines success, Scott?
Well, for most people, it's about, number one, not going poor. Most people at retirement say, I'm less concerned about becoming more wealthy and more concerned about going broke.
Yeah, yes.
I'd like to be able to maintain, ideally it would be great. Yeah, I'd love to have a yacht. But come on.
It's maintaining their current lifestyle.
For most people at retirement. How do I make sure that I'm in a position to maintain my current lifestyle? And so the kind of planning we do for people is designed such that to give people the highest probability of that occurring for them.
And the first thing we do is actually look to see what they're living on today.
Yeah, right? What are you actually living on
today? What are you actually living on today? Not what your budget says you're living on, but what are you living on today? We take your income. We take out what you're paying in Social Security and dollars that go into your 401k. We look to see whether your home's going to be paid off, what debt's going to go away in retirement. We figure out what you're really living on. And then we actually...
Yeah, what's actually being spent?
Not what the budget says, but what are you really living on? Since less than 5% of the American population actually lives on a budget, including your state, local, and federal government. They have budgets. They just don't live on it.
Yeah, maybe a little closer than,
So that success is maintaining the current standard of living. And if you can't maintain a current standard of living, a good advisor will actually tell you you're not going to be able to maintain the current standard of living, which means you may have to downsize the place you're living. You may have to adjust your lifestyle somewhat if you want to retire at a certain age with certain assets. It's just the way it is.
Or find a different kind of employment to do for a period of time.
Yes.
And some advisors will advocate, like, you're going to have to take on more risk in your portfolio. But higher risk doesn't necessarily equal higher returns.
Correct. It actually can change the probability of outcome significantly.
That's exactly what it will do. It might work out in your favor if you take on higher risk.
Or it may be disastrously wrong.
Yes. If you retired right before the Great Recession and had an aggressive portfolio, that's probably a bit of a changer for you.
Yes.
If you retired right at the bottom of the recession and had an aggressive portfolio,
you were well served.
Worked out well.
you were well served.
But if you had more of a moderate approach during either times, you could have been well served and done.
And you would have done okay.
Well, that's the kind of thing we're talking about, probability of outcome.
So when you look at your overall financial picture, you have to take into account the sources of income that are coming to you. So if you're receiving a pension, then you have to actually look at this pension. So let
almost
me give
nobody's
you
getting pensions anymore.
Let me give you an example, though. But state and federal employees and some large online companies are paying pensions. But let me give you an example. If you were an airline pilot and you retired and you worked for United prior to them going into bankruptcy.
Or Delta. Or American.
Yeah,
or whoever.
Your pension was relatively large until they went into bankruptcy and those pensions were discharged to the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Which provided some insurance on it, but most of the insurance benefit was to the lower paid people, not to the high paid pilots.
Because of how they are actually the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation works.
So a $100,000 pension might have been reduced to $25,000 a year.
Which is, can you see that coming? Yeah, you can.
With what?
What could you, if you were retiring as a pilot from any of those three old line carriers, would you have worried about your pension? You might if you did some research and you realized these pensions were only partially funded. So my point being is you work in an environment that you don't have many, you can't control many of the things. And one of the things that you cannot control is your Social Security benefit. And what's going to happen?
You can control the timing of when you're going to receive it.
But you can't control whether that payment is guaranteed forever. Can you?
Well, it's just any of these other pension benefits. Because, you know, it's interesting. Private companies, they participate. Those that have pensions participate in a government-backed insurance program called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. Now, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation guarantees that everyone gets a pension who's retired. But it doesn't guarantee that the dollar amount's going to remain the same. So those high pensions.
If you were receiving an $80,000 or $100,000 pension and your pension actually.
There were caps, just like there's caps on your in the FDIC insurance at the bank.
And your pension plan becomes insolvent and is turned over to the PBGC, Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. Your pension benefit, if it was a high dollar amount, will come down. So here's where I'm making the bridge. Social Security.
So wait a minute. The higher ones came down. The lower ones had no change. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Yes. And the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, how it's worked for 20-some-odd years, 30 years.
I read an article last week. It says, always wait until you're age 70 in order to start Social Security. Always. Not sometimes. Not maybe. It's always.
Which is ironic because there was also in the last couple weeks, I saw this article. The title was "The Social Security Trust Fund Goes Bust." Why? Because recent study had come out from the Social Security Ministry. Where did this come out from? We've seen a few of these come out. The Social Security Trust Fund is going to be. We've reached a point now where we are now dipping into reserves. To make the benefits.
And what does that mean?
Well, the Social Security had this trust fund.
Which is money they sent aside.
Al Gore was going to put in the lockbox.
They set it aside.
Supposedly, it's a accounting maneuver, but yes.
Right. So that money would be available to pay out the beneficiaries at some future point. Much like a pension plan works. Correct?
Correct.
You put money into a defined benefit pension plan. The company does it on your behalf, and they're supposed to pay it out. Very few people are covered by defined benefit pension plans today.
So Social Security, by 2034, which is 16 years from now, will get to a point where it is now insolvent. It had exhausted its reserves. And it will only be able to pay out 79 cents on the dollar. Unless Congress acted and made a change.
Today or in the near future.
At sometime in the future. When this goes bust, if nothing changes, if government changes nothing, there will be 79 cents to the dollar paid out. Now, do we think that there's going to be a 79%, everyone's going to receive 79% of what they're receiving? No.
No. who are they going to take the benefits from?
Well, if we look at, for example, how the government agency, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, does for their retirees, it's the higher pension earners don't get as much.
The people on the lower end get everything that they're. So when you read an article that says, wait until you're age 70 to take Social Security, I cannot disagree more.
Well, for Pat, I'd say 80 to 90% of the population. That's probably fair.
Well, approximately 85% of the population, Scott, is heavily reliant on their Social Security benefits. Which
more than half of retirees, Social Security is the majority of their income in retirement.
So what that means, though, is that anywhere between 15 and 50% of the population, if their Social Security benefit went down or was eliminated, although it may change their standard of living some, it wouldn't put them, as my mother used to say, in the poorhouse, as if there was a big poorhouse that you go to.
Now, what is a poorhouse?
I don't know. I've been trying.
Now it's down by the river, I think.
I've been trying to use as many old sayings as possible. I called someone riffraff the other day because they were.
You called them to their face,
no.
Or you're speaking of others.
I spoke of
yeah,
this
that's
person.
Good. That's really riffraff. Nice when they weren't around. Derogatory comment about them when they're not around. It's perfect. So here, look. I mean, so to Hanson McLean, part of the planning process we go through with people, and even on Social Security planning, is taking into these other assets we have and trying to say, it's again based on probabilities of outcome.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. How much here, at risk is this
here
benefit?
Here is our concern, right? Here's where we're at as an economy. There is a there was an article in the Wall Street Journal a few weeks back that looked at census issues from census reports, so dug into the data. And looked at how the retiring baby boomers is putting a strain on our entitlement programs. Now, listen to this. This is really interesting. Let's look at all adults in America. So these are people age 18 and older, right? If we look at the adults, these are working age adults, 18 and older, including age above 65. So in 1980, if you looked at for every 100 American adults, 19 were age 65 and over.
So 19% of the population working adults.
In 1980. Okay? Let's go out 30 years, three decades, by 2010, not that many years ago. It didn't really change much. It was 21 of every 100 were 65 and over.
Not,
so
21%. Not a big change.
All right? Now, here's how things are changing. Not in the future. Here's how things are changing now. By the end of 2017... 25 adults in America were 65 and over, 25%. That ratio is going to climb to 35% by 2030. And just if we go to 2000.
And this is, layer this on top of the fact that, Scott, that the pension guarantee, the Social Security Trust Fund is pretty much insolvent today.
Here's in 2025. 7 years from now, we're going to go from 25% to 33%. So from 1980, we're at 19%, all the way to 2010, 21%. Barely a change, right? So we look back, there's barely been a change. The last 7 years, it's gone from 19% to 25%.
And it's going to go from 25 to
33% by the year 2025.
This is so. Why should you care? Well, either you should lobby your congressman, senator,
to
for
do what?
Changes in how Social Security is administered, and you should do that, or when you're actually doing the calculations for your retirement and you're going to have high income in retirement or you have plenty of assets, you shouldn't count on it.
I think also, look, if you have a pension from a government agency, Pat, if you are retiring today, let's say you had a pension from a city that had financial issues today.
Oh, if they had financial issues.
The city of Vallejo.
I would worry.
The city of Stockton.
I would worry.
The city of Detroit.
I would worry. I would worry. I would worry. I would expect the possibility of that benefit going down. And it's happened. It hasn't happened a lot, but it's happened. It's happened quite a bit in the state of California with smaller municipalities.
These tiny little municipalities.
Really little ones.
That can't afford making their pension payments anymore.
Right. That's how it starts.
So, and if we start, if you...
So what is the point of telling people this, Scott?
Why we want to just scare them and make bad radio.
Okay. The reason we're telling is that you have to put this into the planning process.
Absolutely. The thing is, look, at Hanson McLean, we've been helping people transition to retirement for 25 plus years, right? When we started, it was 1990 when I started in this industry, a lot of people we worked with had pensions.
Or expected pensions.
Right.
But they weren't vested pensions. So many people actually expected a pension 10
or 15
years.
Okay, well, the younger ones, I'm just thinking those that retire is very common.
Yes.
What we've seen over that time today, fewer and fewer people have pensions. Those that are retiring today worked for a company they thought they were going to have a pension, and the company changed it because they weren't yet vested, right? That was to your point there. They were working for an old line company. Company changed their plan. The pensions weren't there any longer.
So you need to take it into account.
You need to take into account. Again, it comes down to probabilities of outcome. And when you're evaluating this thing, if I were retiring
today and I had ample income, I would take the Social Security benefit as early as possible.
If you had ample income. And if I was retiring and I had a pension from somewhere, I would make sure I have other assets.
I would, yes.
For concern 20 or 30 years from now. Because there's only so many working adults that are going to.
The math itself says that if there aren't as many people paying into it's like a giant Ponzi scheme. It's probably, Social Security, if there are no changes made, will be a great example of generational wealth. Theft. If they don't make the changes, they're going to have to increase the taxes or decrease the services on those people that are actually paying in order to support it. And that is moving assets from one generation to the next.
I suppose that's one way to look at it. Anyway, do some good planning. Look at worst case scenarios. It's always okay to end up with too much money down the road, but you don't want to run out. It's good. Our plan is let's look at probability of outcomes. What areas are potential risks and how can we reduce those risks? So, let's take a quick call here.
Wait, Scott. So we have on our website the fives that we did a few weeks ago, the live thing.
Yes.
So the fives where we debate.
The five, not fives, but yes.
It's called the five.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. The five where we debate five topics.
Yes.
And it's on our website.
Yeah.
That was one of the five.
And you can go to, right on HansonMcLean.com. You can get that. So anyway, let's take a call here. Let's talk to John in Colorado. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you doing today, John?
If I get any better, they'll think I'm breaking the law.
There we go. That's a good line.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good way to live.
And in Colorado, not a lot of laws to be broken.
No, not too many.
Oh, well, California, we're with you now with the medical with the marijuana, not the recreational marijuana.
Recreational.
Yeah, we just voted that in, so now we're with you guys.
So what can we do for you?
Youth of America, so I don't do a whole lot of the recreational stuff. But
I'm just joking.
Wife and I are about 40, and I recently came across $10,000 as part of an estate gift from my grandparents. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
What do you recommend
for it?
What are your thoughts, first of all?
I'd like to do something that would be long-term with it. I don't want to waste it. They were pretty great people and gave a lot of it to kids and grandkids as time went on. So I'd like to continue that wealth. I'd like to put it somewhere, forget about it, have it reinvest potentially on itself, and then 20 years from now when I've forgotten about it, be like, oh, yeah, what a wonderful thing.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah. And are these monies that did you inherit them or your spouse? You said you were married.
My parents inherited them, and then it was a gift to me.
Okay. And do you want to keep these dollars in your name?
Well, let's explain what happens. Well,
okay, yeah, what are my choices?
So what happens is money that is either gifted to you or inherited to you as an individual is considered separate property. It is not part of the marital asset. So what that means is that if you were to keep it in your own name, if something were to happen to your relationship with your spouse, you were to get a divorce, those assets would not be included in that marital asset, so you wouldn't have to split it up. If you put it in, and I'm trying to say this as nice as I possibly can without being offensive, if you put it in the name of both of you, then it becomes a marital asset. You've contributed to the marriage. And in most states, if you were to get a divorce in the future. So in
we're not going to ask you
how your marriage is. I'm sure she sounds like a lovely lady. Scott, your wife inherited. Scott's wife inherited some money.
Years ago.
And what did you do?
Oh, I had it converted to my name immediately.
No, what did you do?
I kept it separate.
You kept it separate?
She actually ended up, it wasn't a ton, and she actually, over a period of time, ended up gifting it to some charities that were important to her. That's how she chose to do it. But that's besides the point. So let me ask you this question. Do you contribute to a Roth IRA?
I do.
Okay, are you maximizing that out?
I have been for the last 5 years, as has the wife. I was debating putting it in there because it's close to the $11,000 that we can put in individually.
But you're doing it anyway. So what's...
Right, and I'm usually just scrapping that together and making a one-time.
And I assume you don't have much debt.
I just refinanced the house at 15 years. I think I owe about $212 on it. I think it's worth
it'll be paid off by the time you get retirement age or whatever. So then.
So
yeah.
And you inherit. You want to keep it. You want to put this somewhere, forget about it, and look at it in 20 years and remember this was a $10,000 gift that was in.
I know what I would do with this, Scott. What do you think you should do with it?
If it were me like this, I would buy a total stock market index fund, ETF.
Very low cost.
Super low cost. You're going to, with the total market, you're going to own about 5,000 different companies in there.
It's going to replicate most of the U.S. stock market.
Which is just giving you ownership of these companies.
It's going to
very tax efficient.
Spin off very little dividends and capital gains. And I love the idea.
Have the dividends and capital gains reinvested. You'll have a tiny bit to tax to report the early years.
And I'd keep it separate.
Okay.
I'd keep it separate.
Because it sounds like you're doing the other things well. I mean, unless there's something else we haven't uncovered. But you're already maximizing your Roth.
Which normally tells us that your 401k is. People that maximize the Roth. It's almost insulting to ask them if they've got excess debt.
Yeah, because you don't.
Because you're number.
You don't have $60,000 in credit card debt.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
You're doing number five on the things you should do. The assumption is the other four things. So I'd go to a.
And that's where you were thinking the same thing, right?
Identical. Yeah. I don't know if I'd buy an ETF. I might even hold it right at a mutual fund company, and buy a total market.
Yeah,
right,
it's the same thing.
It's
they're
the
both
same
so
thing.
Cheap
they're
right
so
now.
Inexpensive.
An ETF is an electronic transfer fund.
Yeah, exchange traded fund.
Exchange traded fund.
But they're just they're like
it's the same thing.
It's almost the same thing.
It's almost so. Even if you were to go,
I'd just go to one of the major discount.
I would
brokerage.
Go to a big discount brokerage, or I would go right to the mutual fund. Where do you have an account?
I've got accounts with Fidelity and with Schwab because I've got some Nestle.
Yeah.
And so.
So what you could do is you could just add these dollars to that account.
Okay.
Buy a specific holding in there, and if I were in your situation, I'd buy a total stock market index.
Yes,
because it's not if it was $1 million, that something it's $10,000, and that way you can just remember this was from the money that was gifted me from my family, and I'm going to keep this separate.
And good enough. I wouldn't even open a new account. Too much hassle. Just buy it in an existing account.
And if I'm willing to take more risk, I'd love it to be $100,000 in 20 years or
you're not going to get much more risk than that.
Okay.
Well, I mean,
you could use a leveraged.
Yeah, you can borrow.
You can use the leveraged ETFs, but I wouldn't do that.
No.
I wouldn't do that. Hey, let me ask you a question. You said you mentioned two different accounts at two different firms. Why two different accounts? Why?
Because Fidelity will not automatically reinvest a Schwab's or a Nestle stock being a Swiss company. And so I opened one originally with Fidelity.
Interesting.
And then I guess it's not with Schwab. I'm sorry. It's with Capital One, I think, now. But they will not automatically reinvest the dividends. So I opened an account with the holder of the Nestle stock.
How much Nestle stock do you have?
A couple $1,000 worth, five.
Okay.
So
okay. All right. And I don't actually think you should, this is a different subject altogether, but it's my radio show. I don't think you should be reinvesting the dividends.
because
you might not want to buy it next week, and you could buy it anytime you want. So the reinvesting dividends actually defaults to the fact that you have to buy it, and you might not always want to buy it. Plus, it's harder to, well, they track the cost basis for you, but I don't see that. I don't see
okay.
that.
Okay, and I'm sort of more of a hands-off. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to play with it rarely. And so if
it's 6 1/2 dozen the other. It's
all
right,
I'm going to. It's not going to. $2,000. But that's anyway. All right, we appreciate the call.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I will see what I can learn, and I hope you guys have a fantastic day and a wonderful California.
All right.
Thank
John.
You, John. Appreciate the thank call you, very much. Bye-bye. If you got a question for us, 1-888-2-HANSEN, 1-888-242-6766.
And we'll get you on the phone, and we'll do our best to help you.
Yeah, we would like to be of service. And
like
help.
We were with John. I think he. I think we helped him.
We might have helped him. We've
well,
might
I don't
have.
Know if he appreciated the Nestle comment, but who doesn't love
appreciated the Nestle comment?
Who doesn't love some Nestles?
Yeah. So, well, that is about all the time we have in today's program, unfortunately. But the good news there, we come to you each week at the same radio program, and you can get a podcast of this each week. We have more podcast subscribers than the previous week. So if you've yet to subscribe to our podcast, go to HanseNMcLean.com and you can subscribe or go to wherever you get your podcast and go to them. Anyway, we're out of time. I hope you have enjoyed your time with us as much as we've enjoyed being with you. Enjoy the rest of your weekend and we'll see you next week. You've been listening to Hanse McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
What matters most to you? Probably family and friends, but what else? When you're in your 20s, it's one thing. Your 30s and 40s, another. When your 50s creep in, you're older and wiser, but the sand in the hourglass of your asset accumulation stage has shifted. Right now, you're listening to Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Sure, they've been hosting Money Matters for 20 years, but they've been CEOs of Hanson McLean Advisors for longer than that. If you're over 50 and you've been saving for retirement, you're probably wondering how your preparation stacks up. Here's what you should do. Go to HansonMcLean.com and either schedule a free consultation with one of our credentialed advisors, or if you're not quite ready for that, maybe take a look at some of the helpful materials in our learning library. You'll see tutorials, podcasts, and articles on things like Social Security, retirement planning, investments, and a whole slew of other things that can help you retire well. Over 50 and starting to see retirement up ahead? Make sure you do it right. We can help. Go to HansonMcLean.com today.